welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
All right. Best 2 minutes of your life. You're welcome. All right, we are continuing our series in the book of Romans. And where I start is there's a guy named Pete Enns. Does anyone know who Pete Enns is? All right, he's got a podcast. If you're a Bible nerd like me, it's a podcast called Bible for Normal People, right? And it's wonderful, him and a guy named Jared. But Pete wrote some books that were really important to me. When I was going through my reimagining what faith is for me, as like a human, but also as like a Christian, but also as a pastor, it was like this really interesting space of like, I don't know if I can hold these beliefs anymore because they don't line up with actually who I am. And so that process is called deconstruction. And in that process, I read Pete Enns' book called The Sin of Certainty. And it's in the back. If you'd like to take that, or if it makes you feel like you're a rebel, like you can steal it, just like steal it back in, all right, when you're done. And in that Sin for Certainty, it was so inspiring because the concept is when I was a like former Chris before, two or three versions of Chris before, I was a very proud, strong evangelical. And something in evangelicalism, especially for evangelical men, was this concept of you have to find certainty, right? You have to, like, know what the real truth is. And that's not bad in and of itself. But it's like taking a flag of this is truth, and you put it in the ground, and you say, my truth is truthier than all the other truths, and my truth is the highest truth of all time. And to be honest, it feels amazing. Right? When you can like land on something and you say like this is true, you don't have to put any more thought into anything other than that truth. Right? Actually, you can put a lot of thought into trying to defend that truth. You don't have to go and find out if there's other ways of thinking or believing or embodying. And so these different theological concepts you put that truth in, the problem is that concept is like nowhere in the Bible. Right? Like zero. Like Christianity, if you're unaware, came out of Judaism. And part of Judaism is this wild celebration of like, debating is the wrong word, but having conversation, being in conversation with different concepts and ideas. In one of their sacred writings, they'd have put a central like idea or value or concept in the middle, and then rabbis would write around it with varying views and different ways of interpreting it. So it's like celebrated. The point isn't to be certain. The most important thing is to have nuance, right? To have some sort of curiosity. And this is where doubt comes in. And in the Sin for Certainty, I just reread a chapter, it was all about doubt and how doubt is like not hip, right? You don't walk into like a work party, you don't walk into like a gathering of friends and like, where's my doubters at? I'm right here, yeah, right? It's not like something that you like embrace, but it is one of the most sacred and holy things as followers of Jesus or just even humans that we have. Because doubt means that, and you don't, it's like, it's not even like you go searching for doubt. It's not always fun to be in doubt of something, right? But it means that you're alive. It means that you are like awake to the reality of where you're at in life. It's like this. If you've ever went to like back to like your college campus or you went back to the town that maybe you lived in for a long time and you're bringing some of your friends like, you got to go see Sally's, and you're on your way to Sally's and you're walking, and after like 8 blocks later, like you stop and you like look around and you're like, I'm lost, right? Doubt is that sense of like something inside of me is like, I don't know where Sally's is anymore, right? When we do this in regards to our faith, or we do this in regards to our life, doubt gives you an opportunity to take stock of where you're at. And that is such a sacred thing. Because if you don't like know where you're at, or you don't know where you're going, right, that's like a uninformed life, right? And so what doubt or curiosity can do then is like last week we talked on chapter 6, it was all on sin and how sin is simply just missing the mark, right? But what doubt can do is go up to the mark, look at it, and say, I've been hitting this mark for like 2 years. But like what I used to experience, what I used to feel, I don't have the same joy. I don't have the same freedom that I feel like I did like 2 years ago. So you went up to that mark and you look at it, you're like, oh, yeah, that was like three versions of Chris ago. And those versions of Chris, like that was really, really life-giving. In fact, that mark, I need to take the mark and I need to put it all the way over here because I have evolved. Because when there is doubt and you can take inventory of where you're at, the opportunity for new life and for death becomes very clear, becomes very present. And this is what the Jesus-looking life is that when we are presented with new ways of thinking or new ways of embodying truth or new ways of finding joy, right, or belonging, we have to like die to that old version of ourselves. We have to die to that old concept because you can't experience that new life unless there's resurrection. And that's the gift and the beauty of what doubt is. Now, I say this because we're going to read Romans chapter 8, the very end of it. And chapter 8 is a banger of a chapter. We could do like four messages on it, and we're not. So you're welcome, all right? But we're going to go through verses 18 to 28, and verse 28 being probably one of the most famous verses in Romans. And if you don't know, it's okay, right? It's not like the shame you, how come you don't know it? And it's also historically taken out of context. But as I read through it, there might be some concepts, there might be some values, there might be some words that you find like, oh, that I remember that. And maybe you might hear some words or concepts that you're like, I don't know about that. No, thank you. So I'd like you to use doubt today or curiosity, different words, same result. As you hear this and as we process, let doubt be your friend. Because if you're in doubt or you're curious, then you can actually like take in and process the information. All right, here we go. Romans 8, verse 18. I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom of glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly present time. Oh, did I get that? Wait, hold on. Groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies, for in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. We wait for it patiently. But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait. Start over. Verse 25, but in hope we wait for what we do not have, and we wait for it patiently. Verse 26, in the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit itself intercedes for us through wordless groans, and he who has searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for God's people in accordance with the will of God. And verse 28, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. So there's a lot in here. And the reason that we're talking about this is because it's talking about creation. It's talking about this weird concept of groaning, right? And what Paul's using a metaphor is in the Hebrew Bible, when it talks about like flourishing of creation, of the ground, it's tied to the people. When the people of God were, as Radiohead, one of my favorite bands says, everything's in its right place. When everything's in its right place, where the people are moving and behaving in the way that God invited them to, that the way they interact with one another, the way they interact with the ground, the way they interacted with God, and even the way they interact with the nations around them, when it was in its right place, the result was that the ground would flourish. Like creation itself, it was deeply connected. And in the same way, if the ground and creation was not flourishing, this would be like a red flag. It'd be an indicator that maybe everything is not in its right place. So then you can go around with doubt or curiosity and begin to investigate in that community, is there something that we're missing? Is there something that is off? Which is like a beautiful way of thinking of when something is not right, instead of just trying to fix that problem, there might be something larger going on. And so Paul is saying, like the creation, all of creation is groaning for this future reality, for this hope. And that future reality, that hope, is the person of Jesus. And Paul says that we are to be adopted into this, like, sonship, right? We're to be adopted into this sibling of being co-heirs with Christ. And when we move and act and embody in the ways of Christ, then everything flourishes. So everything in its right place is when we are moving and acting in the nature of Christ. But here's the thing. In American Christianity, we have individualized faith. It's my own personal salvation. It's my relationship with Jesus. It is my personal devotion time. This is my time to pray or to process on God, which is good, right? I'm a big fan of all those things. But in the Hebrew Bible, and especially in the book of Romans, Paul rarely talks to an individual. Paul uses the word we. He is talking to a community of people. And you can't have a community of people without the individual, but there's a much more emphasis is, are we taking care of one another? In order to take care of one another, we have to be aware of what's happening in relationships, which is really good, because when we are flourishing, it doesn't just benefit us. And that's where a lot of people live, is how, and that's not bad, right? How can I improve my life? How can I be happier? How can I be healthier? But what Paul's trying to get the Roman church to understand is, when you move in the nature of God, all of creation, everything that's in a part of your community, a part of your job, a part of your friendship, all right, a part of your larger family, everyone benefits, which is really, really good news. Because imagine this, when you move in love, like love wins, and it shapes everything. Now, I hope that you are sick of me saying this, because I say it all the time. Like, if we are a community, right? And if we have a place of where we find belonging, and we can move in the nature of love, that means everything is connected. Like, everything is, like, touching. And if everything is connected, that means everything belongs. There's nothing that is then does not belong. And if everything belongs, that means then Dana belongs. And if Dana belongs and we want to see all of creation, all the things around us flourishing, I have to be aware of who Dana is and her story and the things that she's asked me to pray for and the things that she's celebrating, the things that are hard, because I care about Dana. And that's what community does. It's not just about me. We have to be aware and awake to the reality of the things that's happening in the community. So, but there's a problem. Because if you live in this binary world of where there is, like, flourishing, and you think, this is great, all creation's flourishing, it's so wonderful, and you see something that's not. You see a problem. You see a hole. You see something that is problematic, maybe in your group of friends, or at your job, or at church, or in your family. And, like, you're with your friends, and you're like, oh, so we're using those words now. Oh. Oh, so we're talking about that person when they're not in the room? Or maybe you're at work, and you're like, oh, the system that these five people created, right, saying it's going to, like, streamline, help everyone, it's benefiting, funny, those five people and no one else. And you see that. And you feel some sort of, like, invitation to speak up on it. But then you pause because you're like, if it's just flourishing, everything's working, seems like everyone's happy. And if we, like, bring this up and I confront or I talk about this issue, then is it just death and destruction, right? And so there's this opportunity of where you're like, I just have to stay quiet and I have to tolerate it. I just have to pretend like it's not there. Well, no. If you see something that is not flourishing, if you see an opportunity for that person or that group of friends or that system to be better, that's what flourishing does. That's what having doubt or being curious does, is that you're aware, and when you see it, you do something about it. But that it can be hard, right? Because you don't want to, not everyone wants to be that person. But that's what community does. It shows up, and it speaks up, and it evolves. It grows. There's death, and there's resurrection. There's death, and there's new life. So when we, so what Paul's saying is, when we move in that, everything benefits. Oh, I got to bring this up. I was trained as a pastor. I was trained in this verse as saying, like, the earth is, like, groaning, like, in the nature of childbirth, right? Like, there's, like, this pain, but something good's going to come out of it. I was trained as an evangelical pastor to take this literally, and they would say, see, when sin entered the world, Adam and Eve eat the fruit and they leave the garden. Sin then became baked into all of creation. And this is why we have cancer. And this is why we have earthquakes. And this is why we have mudslides, right? And this is why we have death, because the earth is groaning. It wants something more, but it can't have it yet because of sin. And I believed it. I don't know if anyone else, has anyone else ever heard that before? Yeah. So, like, it's funny because then you can just, like, blame Satan on earthquakes, right? You can blame climate change on the devil. You can blame cancer on the devil, which is, like, super convenient, because if you can blame the devil for those things and climate change, then you don't have to take any personal responsibility. Then there's no agency to do something about taking care of the creation in your backyard. It means that you can just be like, oh, nothing we can do other than pray, right? So I just had to slide that in there. That was not planned. But anyways, moving on. So there's this flourishing in this community, and there's this groaning. But then the groaning goes to the individual, right? And then he's saying, and your bodies. Your bodies are longing more, and you feel the groaning inside of you, and there's actually this groaning of the Spirit. And Paul talks about the Spirit, how the Spirit searches us and knows our hearts, and we don't even know what to pray, but through the groanings of the Spirit, it's leading us to pray, which is this idea of the Spirit. If you've never heard of the Spirit, some people call it the Holy Ghost. My friend Kyle calls it the ghost bird. And it's part of the Trinity. There's like the divine or God. Then there's the eternal conscious Christ, right? And then there's the Spirit. And the Spirit is just the like felt experience of God, the tangible felt experience of God. So I know this is a chair because I've seen a chair. I can feel the chair. I could sit on the chair. I am aware of this chair. And that is a tangible experience. And so the Spirit of God is how we have the tangible experience with God. So this morning, when you got up and you saw the sunrise, and maybe you're like me, and maybe first you cursed because it's an hour earlier, and I work on Sunday morning, so I had to get up really early. But when I saw the sunrise, and I saw the sunlight, like, I felt good. When you feel love, like when my puppy Chance hops on my lap because Nikki's not at home, and it's the only time he sits on my lap, all right? And I feel that love. That's the Spirit of God. Any experience of love is God. And the way we experience that is through the Spirit. And so Paul is saying, the Spirit knows who I am. And the Spirit is like taking stock. It's curious about who I am. It's curious about what it is that I want and what I know. It's this very personal, intimate connection with the divine, which I really, really love. And it says then, that if we don't even know what to pray, but the Spirit does, because the Spirit knows me, and the Spirit's grudging, it's groaning, and it's moving and prompting me and like nudging me to pray these things. And praying is simply just acknowledging what needs or things you love or things you lack and the things you want. That's what prayer is. And the Spirit's going to nudge because it is aware of who I am. And the reason I love that concept is that it is such a personal, intimate way of being known and being seen, that God is not someplace else, somewhere else, and is like, you know, taking a little bit of time thinking about me only when I'm like really bad. There's this God that is like in this breath knows who I am and is prompting me to be a better version of myself, or not a better, a fuller version of myself. And I really love that. But to go back to the weird thing about the groaning is in my college, where Sarah and I both graduated from, North Central University. It's a very conservative evangelical Bible college. And when it talks about how the Spirit is groaning, right, prompting us to prayer, I don't know if you remember this, at least in my class, they would take time to practice groaning for God, right? Groaning for God. That's good. Maybe it was only in the guy dorms, but that's going to be like my Christian metal band name, Groaning for God, right? I actually have a slide that says Groaning for God, but anyways. And so they'd get together and they would like speak in tongues if you're a Pentecostal, and then they would go like, ooh, and I'm connecting with God through groaning. Okay, we're going to leave that out. All right, so But what it says then is that when we move the nature of Christ, all of creation flourishes. It impacts everything. And that there's a God who deeply knows us and is wanting and prompting us and nudging us to continue to evolve and grow, to continue to find death and resurrection. And where 28 comes, right? And verse 28, oh, actually, I want to put that up there so you guys can read it. Yeah, there we go. All right? We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love them. And this is a beautiful verse. This is probably one of like the top three verses that are used in the book of Romans because it's really inspiring, right? So like if you had a tummy ache, if you had a hard day at work, if you like experienced some anxiety like me, right? And I could come up to you and say, hey, you know what? We know that in all things God works for the good, man. So let go and let God. Right, Jamie, you had a hard day. Like, God's going to use your hardness and your suffering today to, like, make you a better person, which is, like, true, right? Richard Rohr says the only way we find transformation is in deep pain or deep love. And I way too often somehow choose the pain. I would prefer the love, but somehow pain, right, is present for me to find transformation. And it is true. When we let pain be our teacher, that can be a way of evolving, a way of finding new ways of thinking and believing. It's true. But there's a problem. If you have a tummy ache, it says God's going to use all these things for his good. But if you went, your 13-year-old niece came up to you and told you that she's being sexually assaulted by her dad, your brother, and you said, hey, God's going to use all things for his good. In this suffering, God's testing you, and God's going to use you for something really, really good out of this. You would be an absolute monster, right? Like we say this often, the way we think about God matters, and the way we think about God can't just be benefit some people. It has to be accessible. It has to work its way all throughout. If someone came up to you and said, I lost my partner of 65 years, right? And sadly, I've heard this verse at way too many funerals, right? And it's honestly well-meaning. It's not like they're like going out of the way of saying, I want to make sure I bring some toxic theology in this funeral, right? And the reason they do it is because they have the best intentions. They want to make you feel good. They want to encourage you. Say, hey, I know you're really sad, and God's going to use this sadness for the glory. And it might be true, but if by implying that, right, you're separating this verse from what we just read, right? There's context to it. If you separate it, then you're saying to that 13-year-old girl that God, like, is testing you. It means God wants that to happen. That God either enacted to make it happen, or God just, like, allowed it to happen. And any God that could stop sexual assault, any God that could stop a mudslide to save a village, if there's a God who has opportunity to take that drunk driver and just move him somewhere else, right, and chooses to not to, that is a monster God. And I can't believe in a God like that. So how do we make sense of this, right? If you take it in context of everything that Paul just talked about, that when the community flourishes, when the community is moving in the nature of Christ, moving in a way of love, then it means that we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. Meaning, there's a God who can't stop that from happening. There's a God who can't, like, sit with someone who's crying when they lost their partner. But you can, right? God can't make a casserole appear out of nowhere and come to someone's table. But you and your friends can make meals for someone who's grieving so they don't have to think at all of what to eat for the next week. Because when we act in the nature of God, when we act in the nature of Christ, everything flourishes. And when everything flourishes, it doesn't mean we're all happy. Everything flourishing does not mean we're all just shiny, happy, smiley people, just like, this is so much fun. No, when everything's flourishing, there's still evil, there is still death, there is still addiction, there is still pain, there is still loss, but it means you're not alone. It means in a community that is doing what it is, it can see people in pain, and they can show up, they can bring meals, they can send texts, they can sit and cry with you. Because that's what healthy people do. And this is the picture of what Paul is shaping of, like, what this church can be. But it's like what your group of friends can be. It can be like what your job and where you work can be. It's what your family can be. It can be what you and your partner have is a place where doubt is not a threat. It's a place of where you notice something that's not in its right place. And when you see it, you do something about it. When you see it, you move towards it. When you see it, you let love lead. And when that happens, that's where flourishing is. So I have two things before we end. If you've ever had this verse used against you, I apologize. And maybe it was well-meaning, but there is a God that absolutely loves you. And there's a God that wants good things for you. But God did not test you. God did not make that horrible thing happen to you. I believe that God is present in every element of energy and always is nudging us. It's always moving us towards love. But sadly, there's still evil. There's still horrible things that happen that God can't stop. But God's going to use us to bring flourishing. Second thing is this. We can be the most woke people in the entire universe, right? And we can all like, yes, we're for flourishing, and let's like notice each other, and let's know their stories. And maybe you're here, and you feel like you're in a hard place. Or you're watching online or listening to the podcast, and because we have several people who don't live here that watch online, and they call neighborhood their church, but we can't see them. We might not know their stories. We might not know that they're hurting. If you're hurting, or you have a need, or you want to process, or you're lonely, or you're grieving, or maybe you're like angry at God, those are all normal. Those are all very normal feelings, very normal places to be at. And you want someone to talk to, you want someone to pray with, you want someone to eat with, or you want someone to cry with, or you want someone to celebrate with. Like those connection cards in front of you, you can fill it out. You can do this online at neighborhood.love as well. And on the back, there's a place that says, like, you can check a box saying, I'd like someone to check in with me about my mental health, right? And then there's a place where you can put down maybe prayers or things that you would like someone to pray for. We take those very, very seriously. It's not just like, hey, we're a church, we're supposed to pray for people, so I'll just write on some card and we'll throw it away, right? We take those very, very seriously. If you fill those out or you reach out to us, we have such an amazing community of people who love to help, regardless if it's financial, food, clothes, like mattresses, anything, or mental health, anything that you might need. There's such amazing people that want to help, and we just might not be able to see it. So there's that. Let me pray, and then we can wrap up. So God, I thank you that there is this invitation to live a good and beautiful and full, robust life. And that we don't have to just do it on our own. And not only do we get to do it like by participating and experiencing your spirit, but we get to do it with one another. And I thank you for the people who are here, the people who are listening, that we get to be a community together. And I ask and I pray that you will continue to use us to do good and beautiful things. But also, Spirit, I invite you to like prompt and nudge us to be able to take time and take stock of not only where we are at, but where is our community of friends at? Where is this church at? Where is our family at? And that we can have eyes to not just see the amazing things, but we can also have eyes to see ways that we can do better and be better. So we love you, God. Continue to use us. Amen. All right. Thank you for being here with me this morning on Daylight Savings Day. If you'd like to process, or you'd like to pray, or you'd like to share or have a question, I'll be here for the next couple, 13, 14 minutes. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.